You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is October 14, 2021. Well, for the first year in about 10 years, we missed our annual sojourn to Las Vegas to participate in Freedom Fest, but actually the year before it got canceled due to the global health concerns. But this year the show went on, but in South Dakota, which has turned out to be a bastion of freedom. And we're here with Mark Skousen, who is founder, runs Freedom Fest, a good friend, and a real advocate of liberty and freedom. Mark, it's great to have you back on, and we're really thrilled that Freedom Fest was such a success this year, even though it was in a place where many people wouldn't really think to be going.
Yeah, Carrie, it's good to see you. I think because of the lockdown, and by the way, that's what I tell people, Las Vegas shut us down. The government shut us down. The imperial governor of Nevada, Sisolak, closed us down. So it wasn't the pandemic or whatever you want to call it. Wasn't that. It was the lockdown that kept us from appearing in Las Vegas. And in fact, we did appear. We did have a mini Freedom Fest a few months later. Also, there were a bunch of people who came last July and just showed up, and we went there too. And we met about 100 people. And so we met informally. We had a few sessions. And we did it at the Ahern Hotel, which is in defiance of the state. And you could have an entire conference there without any mask mandate. Now, some people did wear masks. We've been scared sufficiently to protect ourselves and social distance and all that sort of thing. But most of people just acted as if there was not a problem. And of course, we didn't have any, I finally got COVID in August, but that was after I had attended many super spreader events, never got the disease at all, never got the virus. Then Joanne and I got vaccinated, and then we did get COVID. So you never know how safe and effective they keep claiming these kinds of things are. So we decided that we weren't going to allow Las Vegas to maybe shut us down again. And it still is a problem in Vegas. They still have mandates of various sorts. I've attended a few conferences there. And it's just crazy to hold a conference where you can't see each other and you can't see their expressions on their face and stuff like that. But in South Dakota, they had no restrictions, no regulations at all. Even in the hotels, they didn't really bother you there. Although some chains like the Marriott's and stuff like that have those kinds of mandates. And there was an incredible freshness about it. Here we were in these beautiful mountains. The weather was really quite nice. It was 80 degrees during the day and maybe 65 at night. So people could walk back and forth and enjoy the weather. You know, in Vegas in July, it's 120 degrees. It's really oppressive. And it wasn't like that in South Dakota at all. Mount Rushmore was really quite an attraction. I surveyed the attendees there, and over half had never been to Mount Rushmore. So that was an attraction. Over half the people had never been to Freedom Fest before. So a lot of new faces, fresh perspectives, and a lot of new speakers, that sort of thing. We got Governor Kristi Noem to give us our welcome keynote address. She and her husband, as well as the lieutenant governor and her and his wife, all came up on the stage, gave a great presentation about their approach to government regulation during a health crisis. And we had Larry Elder come, who was running for governor at the time, and he was thrilled to be there, standing room only, and he got a standing ovation when he arrived and also at the end of his talk. So people were quite enthused about that. We had just a lot of other debates and topics. You know, we do an investment conference there that was really every session was just packed. It was just really fantastic to have such a successful conference after what had happened in 2020.
Yeah, that's remarkable. And, you know, it's interesting now that we've had a real dose of totalitarianism, all of a sudden interest in Freedom Fest has really increased. And I can't say I'm surprised about it. It's just that it's really refreshing to see people waking up to it. So, Mark, now it's pretty much the restrictions for now, pretty much over, but economy is picking up. What's your take on what's happening with the economy? Or is it expanding here? Is it just all this free money? It's running on fumes. Where are we heading?
Well, before I answer that question, I did want to mention one other thing. We had a record turnout at our Freedom Fest conference. We had over 2,757. We give out exact numbers. We don't exaggerate like a lot of conferences do. I mean, you go to conferences that promise 1,000 people, and there's 200 people in the audience. You never see any more of that. We had a record crowd, so we're really very pleased with that. And we made a profit. We are for profit. We're not fundraisers. We are not people that we're not a think tank. We're not a nonprofit, so we're never fundraising. It's a really unique program. As far as your question is concerned, inflationary boom is the best way to describe it. When you have labor shortages, you have rising prices, you have a supply chain problem. These are all indications that the Biden administration has done a great job in terms of scaring people about the pandemic and also bringing inflation back. You know, Reagan and Paul Volcker did a great job of fighting inflation. So we entered a period of disinflation. We entered a period of a 40-year bull market in the bond market and in the stock market, and interest rates are at record lows. This is all because of this disinflationary environment that Reaganomics promoted. So I don't think it changed that much under the previous president and under the Democrats and so forth. Obama, I don't think it, because I don't think he was able to get through his radical agenda. But through these executive orders and actions that Biden is doing, inflation is coming back with a vengeance. And right now it's quite bullish. I mean, the stock market's near an all-time high. Gross output, GO, my statistic that measures total spending in the economy, hit $50 trillion for the first time in our history. So the GDP final output is almost $23 trillion. These are all inflated numbers because of commodity prices rising, shortages that are developing, wages are going up. People have more money in their pockets because the government has been so loose. Easy money policies continue. All of this is favorable. And so I'm fully invested in the stock market, not in bonds, because interest rates are starting to rise. But the biggest anomaly is that gold has not moved. Gold and silver, which are normal inflation hedges, just have not gone anywhere in the last year in the face of massive reinflation. Maybe you have an explanation for that. I thought I understood the gold market. I've never been a conspiracy buff. The only thing that has changed is the possibility that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies have replaced gold and silver as inflation hedges. So maybe that's the explanation.
You know, I wish I had an answer for you. I think cryptos definitely have something to do with it. Also, the gold went way up at the start of the pandemic, hit its all-time nominal high. So now it's retracing. Look, every commodity, Mark, that we've seen here, with the exception, I think, of coffee and chocolate, have experienced triple-digit gains. Look at what's happening with natural gas and oil. Nat gas is trading at levels in the U.S. It's high over here. It was trading over $6, but in Europe, it's over $30 per million BTU.
Kerry, that's the European situation is because of the green revolution over there. The greenies have insisted, you know, they shut down all the nuclear power plants, especially in Germany, and they went towards solar and wind power to take the place of coal and natural gas. And guess what's happened? You've had these massive shortages. In fact, there's a big shortage in coal right now because they've had to start up the coal production again. A lot of this is artificial government-induced shortages.
Oh, yeah, for sure, no doubt. But the price of everything is going up. It's just in Europe, it's gone up six times what it has in the U.S. But inflation in the classic sense, right, increased money supply and therefore the quantity theory of money, couldn't catch that quite, is evidently proving true. Shock of all shocks. So, but, you know, all things get affected differently by that new money. So in all likelihood, gold is probably going to have another run up. And when is anybody's guess? But nothing should surprise you at this point, right? When you look at how they turned on the spigots and gave out helicopter money to everybody, that was something I never experienced before.
Yeah, and Ludwig von Mises made a very interesting point. He says, money is never neutral. Inflation is never neutral. So what he meant by that was it affects different sectors more than others. I mean, you look at housing prices, stock prices. There's a lot of commodities that are moving much, much higher, much faster than the CPI, the consumer price index. So different sectors are affected more, and this is our strategy. I mean, I've been very bullish on oil stocks, and they've done really well. My gold stocks are down 30% this year. 30%. I mean, who would have ever thought that in this kind of an inflationary environment, the gold stocks, I mean, gold itself is down slightly or maybe flat for the year, but the mining stocks have really taken a hit as investors. So investors are fickle. You just never know where they're going to put their money. So you have to kind of use some technical analysis to see where the trend is, and you move into that trend. I mean, who would have thought that Tesla would be at $800 a share? It's over $800 a share today. And that's with after what it split like 4-1 or something, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's way up. Yeah. Broke $800 yesterday. Pretty amazing. Hey, how much longer can they just keep printing up this money before we have a currency crisis or something even worse?
So, you and I follow the Austrian theory of the business cycle. And so you have the inflationary boom, and it can last much longer than anybody expects. And then you have the deflationary bust. And unfortunately, Austrian economists have always focused on the bust. I mean, you have Mises and Hayek predicting the 29 crash. Well, they never predicted the 29 boom, or, you know, the 1920s, the roaring 20s. It just all talked about the bust. And even today, you have Peter Schiff's of the world and Robert Kawasaki and Doug Casey and the gold bugs in general. All they talk about is get out of the stock market. It's going to crash. Well, you need to have some kind of a technique to take advantage of the boom, which often can last long. You know, the bust comes fast and furious. There's an old saying on Wall Street, and in my book, The Maxims of Wall Street, that says the market takes the elevator up and the escalator down, the stairs up and the escalator down, or the elevator down. So that the bull market goes like this, steady up, up, and then you have the crash, and it happens really fast, and it's hard to predict. The best you can do is you stop orders that are loose within 20%. You can't really figure out what the top is. I mean, for example, Robert Kawasaki of Rich Dad Poor Dad, he's predicting this October the greatest crash in the history of the world. Greatest crash in the history of the world. We're halfway through October. It hasn't happened. I'm very suspicious of those who cry wolf constantly. Yeah. You're leaving a lot of money on the table, Carrie, when you do that.
Hey, well, you know, there's an old saying also from Wall Street that you could guess the direction of something or what's going to happen, or you could guess when it's going to happen, but don't do both at the same time because you're sure to be wrong. And all of these doomsayers have all been wrong. Since I've been in this space, which is over 10 years, the only guy I've ever seen correct during that time, well, there's two or three, and they're all cycle analysts. A guy by the name of Martin Armstrong, when I first started covering him 10 years ago, he said we would have Dow 35,000 and eventually Dow 60,000. It didn't happen in exactly the timetable he thought, but he's never deviated from that forecast, and he's been right all along. And in 10 years, the type of corrections that we've had, Mark, have really been very puny and minor, short-lived by historical comparison.
Well, no, I would take exception to that, because the NASDAQ did fall 70% from 2000 to 2003, okay? That was because it was post-internet. No, just a three-year period. And then in 2008, 2009, the stock market went down 50%.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's a big hit for people who are on retirement income, depending on their money. And they get nervous and they end up selling at some point, probably at the bottom. I would agree with you. You know, another great quote from the Maxims is from Steve Forbes. He says, you know, everybody is a disciplined long-term investor until the market goes down, and then they panic. So I would agree with you. This mother of all bull markets since 2008 has been traumatic. The only sell-off that we had occurred last March when the pandemic hit and everybody panicked. But then it roared back really fast. I mean, thank goodness I held on to my position. But a lot of stocks are down 30% in a month.
I know. I know. It was gut-wrenching, but still, that used to take 6 months to do that, or 3 months. You know, according to classic Dow theory, you'd get these intermediate corrections that everybody would be convinced was the beginning of the next bear market, or when it was a bear market and it went up, they were convinced it was the beginning of the new bull market. Timelines have been so compressed. And is that a function of government policy? Is that a function of technology? Is it a function of liquidity of the markets that that these corrections last for, you know, going back to, remember, 87, it lasted for a very short period of time, relatively speaking, that crash.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets, with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, but and again, we're talking about the U.S. market, and it's very important that we because we're exceptional. There's no question there's American exceptionalism in Wall Street. There's a great study that has studied 34 stock markets around the world in 2000. They came up with a 100-year study of the stock market in 34 markets. They could only find 34 that were consistent because it didn't have Israel, it didn't have Argentina, it didn't have Mexico, because a lot of these markets, Russia didn't exist for 100 years. They closed down the markets because of various crises. But the ones that were open, all of them were bullish in the long term, including the Japanese market, which kind of surprised me because they've really been in a bear market a long time. And the U.S. outperformed all 34 markets. The U.S. outperformed. Now, I guess that's because we are the center of entrepreneurship. I mean, if you look at the big companies of Amazon and Microsoft and Apple and so on, these are all American companies, Netflix, Facebook, all coming out of the U.S. There's very little that comes outside the U.S. So as long as we don't kill that golden goose, then I say the U.S. market is the place to be. And in my newsletter, which I've been writing for 40 years, I have gradually just shifted only U.S. stocks. Now, most U.S. stocks are also global in their marketplace. If you buy Facebook, you're buying the world. If you buy Google, you're buying the world. If you buy Amazon, you're buying the world. Starbucks is everywhere. Boeing is everywhere. So you're buying the U.S. market. But it just seems like the U.S. market is the place to be. And everybody keeps saying how emerging markets are so cheap and you really make a lot of money and stuff. Well, that may be, but I'm not willing to take that risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sometimes bargains turn out not to be bargains at all. They turn out to be very, very costly. And it certainly looked like globalism was going to elevate these emerging markets, but they've done horribly, especially compared to the U.S. markets. I follow every month. I do a market review with a guy by the name of Mickey Fulp, and we cover every major market. And the emerging markets have lagged everything. The only market that's done worse than the emerging market is the Toronto Venture Exchange. You know, outside of that, you know, the U.S. markets, and especially last year, Mark, was the year of the Russell 2000. It was by far and away the leader market. One thing, I want to shift gears away from stocks into cryptocurrencies. Now, as Austrians, Mises and Hayek and others always held out the promise of competing currencies. And it looks like in cryptos, we truly finally have competing currencies, even though they aren't really currencies. But we don't need to get into that. We'll just assume, for the sake of argument, they're currencies. Do you think governments can possibly allow these cryptos to remain unfettered and to ultimately present a threat to government-backed fiat currencies? That's a question nobody seems to ever want to answer or be able to answer.
I do think that they're here to stay. I do not accept the criticism of a number of Austrians who say, well, there's nothing backing it. Well, there's nothing backing the paper money either, and it continues to circulate. So it all depends on the willingness of people to accept it. And Bitcoin is used as a medium of exchange, not a lot, but is used. It's used as a store of value. It is used as an asset allocator. So these are elements of that make it legitimate investment, currency, money, whatever you want to call it. It's just not. The problem is Gresham's law. Gresham's law says bad money drives out good. And what happens is you pocket the Bitcoin and you spend the dollars. That's what's happening there. So I think it's and it may be the new inflation hedge. So there's a lot of reasons why I have a position in Bitcoin. The blockchain technology has a lot to offer it. That one of the drawbacks to Bitcoin is to the transactions, to confirm the transactions apparently takes a long time. And you can't, so you can't use that for the financial markets or for commodity trading and so on. But I keep understanding that they have cryptocurrencies now that operate where you can confirm the transactions very quickly. So I'm not sure Bitcoin will be the final currency. You know, you have lots of examples of where somebody comes along, like AOL was the original email, right? And now everybody has Gmail and stuff like that. So it's hard to say what will come out as the ultimate winner. There's like 10,000 of these cryptocurrencies out there. Obviously, this is like the 1990s, the internet bubble. There's got to be a collapse at some point here, and it's probably going to affect everything.
It's even worse than the internet bubble, because at least they had a URL. You know, these cryptos don't even have a URL. But I look at them and I say, you know, I call them kleptocurrencies, because with the exception of the top 50, let's say 50 cryptos, all the others have no purpose for existing other than to basically take money from unsuspecting people. But you know, this is, if we go back to pre-Great Depression, the U.S. stock market basically was an unregulated market where you could say or do anything. There were no shareholder protections, no disclosure requirements. Fraud was totally acceptable, perfectly acceptable. Misstatement of fact, omission of material facts, none of that mattered. Well, we're really in the same situation with cryptos. They're opaque, many of them, besides the blockchain being there. They're very opaque. You can say anything. There's no such thing. It's like commodities. In commodities, there is no insider trading. In cryptos, there's no such thing as insider trading. And the trading is truly a global marketplace. So that really hinders the prospect of regulation. It really is the Wild West.
So first of all, the 1920s, prior to the SEC being created in 1933, you actually did have regulation. The New York Stock Exchange had a bunch of regulations that they imposed in the 20s to remove wash sales and insider trading and stuff like that. There was a lot that went on there. And there was, you know, Adam Smith said it best. He said, you can't eliminate deception and fraud in business, but you can minimize it. And that's what the New York Stock Exchange was doing. And I think it would have done a better job than the federal government intervening and creating their own new legislation. So I tend to favor regulation, but I like self-regulation at best by NASDAQ or something like that. The crypto, there is regulation that's coming. The SEC is currently going to issue regulations very soon, because they all these crypto companies are coming out with ETFs. They want to have an ETF, and they have to get approval from the SEC. So that is in the process right now. I mean, Grayscale and Coin and a lot of these companies are, ARK Innovation, you know, the Cathie Wood, ARK Innovation, those people are looking to do a crypto. Now, I've been recommending BLOK, which is a transformational, it's amplified transformational fund, BLOK, and it invests in blockchain type of companies, mainly Square, PayPal. They have some really big names in there as well. I think it's a better way to invest in the future. You got to have a diversified portfolio, because you don't know what's going to be accepted in the end. And even Grayscale is going beyond Bitcoin with Ethereum and other cryptocurrencies. So they're trying to spread their risk, which I think is a smart thing to do. But regulation is coming. I mean, and it's not going to be the banning, from what I can see, like China banning mining, banning the trading of cryptocurrencies. I mean, that's truly their totalitarian. That I think the U.S. realizes, even in the Biden administration, realizes that this is a legitimate technology, and we can't just ban it. We need to work with it. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of regulations come out.
Yeah. And, you know, the problem is that there are these NFTs, non-fungible tokens. There are these other security tokens, securitized tokens, where they're going to own interest in artwork, collectible vehicles, all this stuff. Well, yeah, once the thing is issued, okay, so you meet the issuance threshold, but then once it's out there trading, there's kind of, it can be traded anywhere in the world, and it makes regulation really difficult on a global basis. Anyways, I guess that's evolving the regulatory framework. Mark, any other trends you're seeing that you want to share with us where we maybe could profit from them?
Well, I am concerned about taxation, the increased level of taxation by the Biden administration, both with the state planning, with the potential elimination of the stepped-up basis, which would take away the ability to transfer assets to your heirs without getting hit with a major tax thing. Now, that was pulled from the legislation, so that was really good. But some of the crazy ideas which I'm monitoring, including the idea that you set asset prices and you pay capital gains even though you haven't sold the product. I mean, that's just insane. And again, I think those are just thrown out there to see what the response is. I felt that investors are getting really ripped off here by the Democrats in particular. They don't understand investing. They don't understand the majority of Americans are now investors. And of course, most of their money is in IRAs and KEO or 401ks. So it's tax exempt right now. Tax deferred is the right word. But required minimum distributions, you may not be old enough for that to start kicking in, but they require you to take out of your IRA and your 401k a minimum of 7 or 8%, and that becomes taxable. They're developing great ways to make sure that the system keeps working, Social Security doesn't go bankrupt, that Medicare doesn't go bankrupt. Do you know what they're doing there? They're making Social Security taxable, so they get the money back. And Medicare, the premiums on Medicare have just gone through the roof. I mean, it costs $300 or $400 a month, maybe $500 a month in Medicare premiums. Did you know that?
Oh,
it's not a free system. You pay into it, and you pay into it. When you get it out, you still pay these premiums. It's just insane.
I'm a year away. A little less than a year away. And hey, at least
I see it good and hard.
At least they have to give it to you, unlike private insurance, where they don't like it. They don't have to give it to you, at least in most states. There are community rated states that require global universal insurance. Yeah, that's a lot of alarming trends for sure. But I always go back to Will Rogers' famous saying when they asked him about this. And he said, ignorance got us into this mess and ignorance will get us out.
Well, he was always an optimist, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that really does bother me is the increasing complexity of our tax system, especially when we start putting different levels of progressivity. And I like to, I'm giving a talk at Hillsdale, by the way, on Veterans Day, November 11th. So if anybody's in the area, they can come by and hear my lecture on what is the ideal tax system that maximizes liberty and prosperity. And of course, I'm not an anarchist saying the answer is zero, because I do think there's legitimate functions for government. But I like the Hong Kong model really well. Their political system is all screwed up, but their economic model is really quite impressive. They have a graduated tax that goes up to 17% for business and 16% for individuals. And that's it. It maxes out at 50,000 Hong Kong dollars, which is 15,000 US. And then it stays at that level. There's no tax on capital gains, interest, or dividends, so you're encouraged to save money. They have the highest per capita income now in all of Asia, or at least did before this collapse, the communists trying to take over there.
Yeah.
The other thing I really like about it was, when do you think the last time Hong Kong significantly changed its tax policy?
Oh, geez, I think it was like 50s or early 60s, I think.
Yeah. They haven't had any changes, virtually no changes. Meanwhile, we change ours every couple of years because of our really didn't have a democracy in Hong Kong. So there is an advantage, it seems, to a benevolent dictator out there saying this is the ideal tax system. So that's what I'm going to talk about. I think they have no sales tax on top of it. I don't know. They do have a real estate tax that is pretty significant, but that's where they get most of their income.
Yeah. Remarkable place. And Milton Friedman always hung them out as an example of how a flat tax works and minimal taxes. And they seem to be able to keep the trains running on time, the subways and the buses, and the place is pretty clean overall. And seems to function more crowded than most cities in the United States, and yet it apparently better run. We'll see. The verdict is not out. But Mark, besides Freedom Fest, where do we find you?
So my newsletter is Forecasts and Strategies. I've been writing it since 1980 when Ronald Reagan was elected president. So I've been through bull and bear and boom and bust and good times and the bad times. So people can go to markskousen.com and get more information on my newsletter. Introductory offer is just, I think, $99, something like that for a one-year subscription. I have some trading services as well, short-term trading services. And for Freedom Fest, our next year's Freedom Fest, we'll be back in Las Vegas at the Mirage Hotel and Casinos. First time we've been there, but they have a beautiful convention facility. And if they go to freedomfest.com, they can get more information. Dates are July 13th through the 17th, 13th through the 16th, I guess, 13th through the 16th. And I'll give you a little bit of anticipation of what we're doing. One of the things we're doing is having, I'll give you a hint. Anyone? Bueller. So we have Ben Stein coming.
Oh, okay.
And he spoke at the very first Fee Fest when I was president of Fee in 2002. And 20 years later, he's coming back and he will be debating Art Laffer on should the wealthy be taxed and is the Laffer curve voodoo economics. If you ever remember that
scene. Oh, I remember that from
Bueller's Day Off. We're going to play that, and then we're going to have a debate. They're both going to speak, and we're going to have a debate on that. It's really going to be fun.
All right. Excellent. Well, we really appreciate your coming on the show. As always, Mark, good luck with Freedom Fest. I am so thrilled that it was such a success this year, that so many people made the trek to South Dakota, of all places. There could be a new license plate for South Dakota, not just for bikers. And bikers, libertarians, kind of cut from the same cloth, a lot of them. Hey, if you got a question for Mark, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Mark, we'll talk to you again. Be well, my friend. It's great to have you back on and connect with you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.